Today on Know How.
We're going to bust this bad boy open and take a look at the inside of a gaming rig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by Ring. Ring's alarm security kit is a smarter way to protect your entire home. Go to ring.com/knowhow to learn how you can get whole home security for only $10 per month.
Welcome to Know How, the second episode of gaming series focused episodes, whatever you want to call that. We're talking about gaming for the next 11 weeks, I think. And this is my co-host, a gaming rig PC. Also joining us is Sam Iskovich from Ars Technica. How you doing, Sam?
To be fair, I'll always be happy being second tier to a giant beast of a PC. But if this hasn't given you any indication, nor Jason's fever, we are here to talk about PC gaming.
Yes, PC gaming. Last week we did a focus on consoles, which I feel like is, you know, the easy way for people to get into gaming. People get real passionate about this category. Why is that?
Ooh, where do we begin? I mean, the shortest answer is more customization. Okay. When you have a gaming computer, you go out of the box with a lot of options, but you also have to put in more work. You're installing things yourself. You're entering into unsigned code. You have so many possibilities just on the software front, let alone the fact that you may be putting the system together, which puts you in a whole category of what graphics card, what RAM, do I need a Sound Blaster 16? You don't need a Sound Blaster 16. You know, there's all these sort of things that go into what you can put into it and what you get out. Because maybe you just want to get a cheap old machine that runs games perfectly fine. Maybe you want to go super top of the line to run that 8K display that costs $20 gazillion that your dad has in his second castle. You know, you want to go from the bottom to the top. PC gaming is where you go.
Right. Yeah, consoles, obviously, you get a box. It's filled with things already for you. You make no decisions. PC gaming, I mean, you can go there, right? Like, there's prefab machines, and then there's, like, the next level are the people that are like, you know what, I'm going to buy all the parts. I'm going to construct it myself. You know, and I don't know if that's the more expensive route to go, but it certainly takes a lot more effort and a lot more knowledge.
And what's nice is we have this time to talk about both of those sort of ways to go. Mm-hmm. That there is a prefab world, there is a build-it-yourself world, and it's just a chance to really break down which way you might want to go if you think that PC gaming is your steez.
Yeah, okay, so let's kind of start with the basics, kind of the wide view. Obviously, we're going to dive actually into this machine in our second segment. But right now, let's kind of talk about kind of setting the scene, because, you know, people might be thinking, well, you know, maybe I want to get into PC gaming. You know, who is making that decision specifically? Why might they choose to do that? Do they get any sort of advantages when it comes to, you know, types of controlling mechanisms for the games in a PC versus the limited methods of control for consoles? Like, I mean, what would you say is the main benefit? I mean, obviously customization, but it's going to be really expensive for anyone to customize their machine over time. They got to be okay with that, obviously.
Well, I mean, this is a big question that's been there for a long time in PC gaming of how the machine evolves. Now, we're entering into a weird world now where consoles have like pro versions or X versions,
yeah,
or
right,
things like that. And that means you're buying a whole new box. Many times when it comes to a gaming computer, you have the option to say, you know what? I only need to add a little bit here or there. Or, oh, I don't need to get a new CPU for a while because these other parts may need more upgrading than the CPU itself, et cetera, et cetera. So customization with a PC really does let you ultimately possibly save money in terms of what you get at what time, at what point you spend money. Depending on the system you start with, you might be able to get parts for super cheap. Like, I want to play PC games today and I only have a few $100. Here's what I can get for now. And when I want to get up to crazier graphics or faster speeds, then I can take a game I like and add, you know, add some different toggles and tweaks, make the shadows nicer, make this effect nicer, or that sort of thing. And PC gaming does give you a sort of cheaper route to that sometimes. But ultimately, one thing about PC gaming, well, I say ultimately, there's so many avenues to go. But PC gaming is just a really wide spectrum. You have so many different games you can play from so many different eras. Backwards compatibility is not a thing you have to ask a lot of the time. Now, different versions of Windows, when we go back to 90s or even the 80s, you might run into some issues of running your favorite DOS game on an old computer. But chances are there is a way, whether it's through an emulator or through some sort of open source project, that you can take that old software and get it running on your machine. Plus, you just have options in terms of where you get games. Steam is sort of the de facto place. If you want to play games on Windows, Mac, or Linux, get Steam, and you can start buying games, and a lot of cheap games because of sales, and there's sales all the time. And then you go to other storefronts. There's GOG.com, which is run by CD Projekt Red. They made a game called The Witcher, and they've got that running with no DRM on any of its games, that you can buy a game, and that's your EXE to use as you see fit. Which is a really nice thing, that there's options in the PC gaming space where you just own the data. You've got the disk, you've got the file, and you don't have to worry about phoning home for some of these necessarily. And Steam has an offline mode and things like that. So you have this wide range of software, and then from there, the software you get could be the dinkiest ASCII-loaded 2-bit game like Dwarf Fortress. By the way, Dwarf Fortress is incredible. It's old. It constantly changes itself. It's one of the most complex games ever, and every single thing in the game is just a dinky little like asterisk or an ampersand that makes up the entire game. Go all the way to the spectrum to something like Crysis 3 or Shadow of the Tomb Raider, where they're pushing the latest graphics cards with the craziest special effects and everything in between. And you don't necessarily get that total breadth depending on what console you get. You can play a lot of older games on the newer Xbox and PlayStation and even the Switch, but when it comes to just being able to play pretty much anything you can imagine, building or getting some sort of computer, whether Windows, Mac, or Linux, is just the biggest gaming selection, bar none.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, obviously there's the gaming aspects of getting a gaming PC, but then it's also a PC, right? Like, talk about alternative uses, you know, for your console, maybe you have media, maybe you have, you know, a handful of other things. With a PC, like, this is your entire digital life, and oh, by the way, it's about, you know, the best rig that you could possibly, you know, the best quality of games that you could possibly expect to come out of it. But you're not getting, like, you're getting, I'm sure, some exclusive titles that only release for PC, but
absolutely,
that you'll never see on console. It works the other way too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's exclusive stuff that only ships on PC or ships on PC first. A lot of indie games might come out on PC, but not on a certain console. Like, there will be games that have console exclusivity. Well, you don't have to worry about that because their PC version, well, everybody who's got a PC will be able to play that one and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's ultimately, not every game's going to be on PC. Spider-Man is going to be PlayStation 4 only. If you have Windows 10, that means you get access to a lot of games that come out on Xbox because Microsoft has made a pledge so that its first-party games will load on Xboxes and Windows 10. You're going to need a pretty powerful computer for some of those games. So, like, Sea of Thieves will run on a crappier PC, but not, like, the worst. You're going to need at least some juice there. But that's a nice feather in your cap that Microsoft has extended that so that you've got those kind of options if you want to get more games on your computer.
That's a really big bonus.
Yeah.
I mean, that gives you a window into an entirely different kind of category, a different collection of games.
That was a pretty good pun there, a window into a whole other category.
Oh,
look,
man,
at you.
See, it just comes to me naturally. I think you're rubbing off on me a little bit. Who is buying a prefab machine versus building their own from scratch? You've got to really understand all of the components that go into it to really design, you know, build this from the bottom up, right?
You know, I would have said years ago that only a fool would buy a prefabricated PC because I love building them. But
I think that's a song. Only a fool buy, yeah. It's Elvis,
wow, Elvis Nerdstello. But you can honestly do pretty well if you pick through guides and coupons and Sunday flyers for prefabbed PCs, because sometimes really good systems with parts you've heard of collect dust and they need to move. So don't be afraid of buying prefab. There's certain problems with some companies. I'm not going to go in and say specifically certain makers are better or worse than others. You'll want to check general reliability. But ultimately, you're not really that terrible off if you go and buy a prefab machine, especially if you don't mind voiding that warranty in some cases, popping it open, changing out RAM, changing out different system components when you decide that prefab machine isn't quite to what you want anymore. So, you know, building your own, I think, obviously gives you the most options. You say, I only want a power supply unit that's made by this company, and that's the thing that you're, you know, power goes through. That's a pretty crucial component. Or I want RAM that runs in this certain way, and this company has the most reliable record for making RAM. Things like that can matter, and you want to maybe take those options into consideration. But prefab, you're not doing that terribly if you just want something really solid that you're not necessarily going to immediately overclock or push the heat envelope up or things like that. And we can't forget the fact that you have control options up the wazoo when you're playing on PC. Keyboard and mouse is a de facto way to play first-person shooters, and first-person shooters are amazing on PC. In fact, you'll often get the most up-and-coming first-person shooters on PC before on other platforms because of keyboard and mouse. They kind of go hand-in-hand. PUBG was on PC way before other consoles. Same with a lot of other, especially out of Eastern Europe, like Dying Light has its own PUBG-like mode that's just come out. There's those sorts of options out there. And then, even though I've mentioned a bunch of different storefronts, price is really important. Sales on all of these different platforms, I just want to really emphasize that you have free-to-play options and super cheap sales on all of the storefronts I mentioned and more, not to mention open source games and mods. So maybe you already own a classic game and you want to add other levels to Doom. Like there's a Seinfeld mod that's like decades old that you can attach to the original Doom where they do dumb dances and say quotes when you kill them. I just think that's really great that you don't necessarily get things that crazy and out of nowhere on other platforms. So PC gives you that.
I have to imagine there's communities like that you can find online that will help people that are kind of getting interested in this sort of thing. Are there sites or forums that people congregate? I know probably there's a large community on Ars Technica.
That was
you go
just
into the
say,
comments, right?
So as an editor over at Ars Technica, I will tell you right now, we have an incredible community of PC builders who will welcome you with warm, open, but also slightly condescending arms. I swear I say that as a compliment. The men and women who troll the Ars Technica forums know their stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's communities out there that will happily take your questions because they don't want you to short out your power supply or do something incredibly stupid. So don't be afraid of reaching out.
Yeah, PC Perspective, another, thank you, Burke, another great channel to check out online. PC Perspective, we also have This Week in Computer Hardware as another kind of forum for a lot of this stuff. So plenty of ways to educate yourself on building up a machine. We were looking very, very basically at the outside of this rig. We're going to pull it apart, but first let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How.
All right, so this episode is brought to you by Ring. I'm a huge fan of Ring. We've got a bunch of Ring devices in our home, easy to set up, easy to use, and the insight that it gives you into how your home operates when you're away is really awesome. Surely you've heard of Ring before. They are the ones, of course, that made the doorbell that everybody talks about, lets you answer the door with your phone. So even when you're not there, maybe you're there and you answer with your phone anyways. Well, they just reinvented the home alarm system, and it's pretty awesome. We all know traditional alarm companies prioritize high monthly premiums, and they often tie into long-term contracts. So Ring, aware of this, are working to change that. Ring Alarm is an easy-to-install, affordable home security system, and it has no long-term contracts to deal with. So none of that stuff that you used to with the other systems. You can build the system that's right for your home and have it up and running in minutes. The Ring Alarm Security Kit comes with everything you need to protect your home, and 24/7 professional monitoring is only $10 a month. So for $10 a month, it includes a number of things. You get the base station, which keeps your alarm system online and connected to mobile devices. There's a keypad that you set up. It arms and disarms your alarm system as needed. There's contact sensor that actually lets you know when doors or windows are open. You can choose the portals that you want that attached to track it. There's a motion detector that detects motion inside of your home, wherever it happens to be set up. And then there's a range extender that extends the signal from your base station to make sure everything is connected and stays connected and that signal doesn't go, doesn't deplete at all. It's awesome to set up. That's the thing about Ring devices. They're so easy to set up. And actually, with the keypad, you can really, you can mount it anywhere. It doesn't have to be, you know, plugged into a power supply. You can literally put it on the wall that works and not have to worry about doing any advanced electrical work to put it there. It's all battery powered and just really makes it super easy to choose and install. It really is a smarter way to protect your entire home. The Ring Alarm Security Kit is available at ring.com and retail stores across the U.S. Go to ring.com/knowhow to learn how you can get whole home security for only $10 per month. That's ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support.
All right, so we talked a little bit about why people might want to get into PC gaming. And we happen to have a pretty monster-looking gaming rig here.
It's almost as tall as you.
Almost. But not quite as bulky as me. Well, actually, it's much, much stronger than I am. Acer Predator.
That eye roll, I want... Gift or gift, however you say it, I want that.
The Acer Predator Orion 5000. That's what we have right here. This is a beast, or at least it looks like a beast. It looks like it has a handle up at the top. Is this for like traveling gamers going to competitions? Like, yeah, I've got my own rig.
I'll tell you right now, we can make fun of the size and heft and silliness, but a handle is always awesome. Now, I'm a guy who had a GameCube back in the day, and I'm the only person I know who really appreciated the handle on that. So don't ever knock a handle. And it's sturdy. I watched you carry that around earlier.
No, it is very sturdy. And actually, yeah, it makes this thing surprisingly portable, even though it's so big.
Although this door is not currently screwed in, so he's really playing with fire right now. Okay. Always screw this in before playing with the handle.
Yeah, we wanted to make it a little easier so that we can pop this open. So let's pop that off.
Because we're going to reveal some of the things, but not all of them. Now, you know, notice the glass plate right here. That's an option. Sometimes you're going to want to show off the parts inside and the LED lighting. You know, if that's your bag, great. Get the grill like that. There are different designs that are sometimes GPU only otherwise. And you can always get the ones that don't do that. But this is specifically for that sort of here's how much money I put into my PC appeal.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've actually bought like a Windows PC. Like we're talking years. I've had lots of Macs since then. A lot of them have a lot of splashy like lights and stuff. Like that's a big thing now, right? It's almost like pimp your PC.
Well, I mean, and that's an option. If you want to blow it up, if you want to have matching LED lights between your keyboard and mouse and internals of a computer, you can get software for that. That matches those all up, which I'm not going to lie. I don't need that stuff, but I get a little entranced and intrigued when I see that sort of thing.
Sure.
But what's more important with this guy, let's talk about the parts. Over here is this giant Cooler Master cooler that is on top of the i7-8700K processor. That's from Intel. That clocks at a stock 3.7 gigahertz, but goes way higher in terms of boost mode and can overclock pretty easily. Not as much as like some of the other K series ones, but the K ones are unlocked. That K on an Intel processor tells you that you have an easier time just going in and overclocking. This one, I think with that cooling, we haven't tested it out yet, but my guess is 5 gigahertz is pretty doable. But again, we'll get into more of that in a little while.
Is there any reason that you might need to remove this?
If you want to make it twice as huge? I mean, yeah, if you want to go in and change out the processor and things like that, that's an option. And
but you won't need to do that for any time soon.
Well, so. I mean, you would hope... Well, don't speak too soon when it comes to this sort of stuff. So we go from here. We're going to head over to the RAM, and we've got a total of 4 slots. 2 of them are used. I'm looking up at our specs. We're at 16 gigs of DDR4, and we can get that all the way up to 64 gigs if we essentially have 4 16-gig slots for each of those DIMMs. And then down here, we have that graphics card, that GPU. This one is a pretty solid 2017 model. That is an NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1080. That's going to give you up to 8 gigs of dedicated GDDR5 memory, I believe. Don't quote me on that. Now, down here, beneath this crazy block, we have a power supply of 730 watts. That is... I would say that's overkill for this combination of parts in terms of essentially it's the CPU and GPU that are going to be primarily the biggest money or power. Why?
Right.
Money. Power is money. Money is power. But that's going to be the most demanding stuff. I want to say 650 watts is sort of your go-to amount if you are building your own machine. And then otherwise, the motherboard has all the stuff built in. Now, you'd have to come all the way over to my side to see the back of the motherboard.
Let's see here. Let's see if I can do that.
Yeah. And then we've got, because in the motherboard here, we've got a lot of different audio outs. You've got a dedicated microphone out there. You've got built-in Ethernet. You've got older USB 2.0. You've got four USB 3.0, more USB 2.0. If we go down again, we're going to come back down to the GPU. And this is, you've got one, two, three DVI. We've got one HDMI.
Why would you need so many video outs?
Well, let's say you want to have multiple monitors. Let's say you want to have a virtual reality headset. You're going to want to have
VR. That's a big consideration. This machine's probably very well set up for that.
Correct. And some monitors require multiple ports just to drive one monitor.
Right.
And then down here, that's where the power supply plugs in. That's simple as that. But even when you go all the way to the top of the machine, I love doing this tapping. I hope that's not ruining it, the sound guy's job. But you also get a few USB ports, including USB 3.0. That little bit of extra future-proofing there.
Yep.
On top of yet another slightly more convenient headset out and microphone out. Sometimes that headset out will drive everything, your ears and your microphone, so you don't need to use both of those ports, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, there are a bunch of different things that can be built in, and this machine clearly is going kind of overkill with this crazy enclosure for the power supply, probably to bundle in a bunch of cables. There's some pretty good cord management here. You're not seeing a bunch of cords dangling around. We have our, what I believe is a DVD drive. I don't think it's a DVD writer or anything like that. And I'm looking to see where the heck the hard drives are, because that's one thing that's kind of important. They may be down in there. You know, hard drives certainly aren't a unimportant element on a computer like this.
Yeah, and I think this is a 512 gig solid state.
Yep.
So it's probably pretty low profile.
Solid, but, you know, I'm not seeing, maybe I'm blind, I'm not seeing M2 drives. Mm-hmm. You know, M2 drives are a standard. If you want lightning fast loads of your OS of choice, those M2 drives get you into some crazy high speeds for that. But otherwise, there's not, when we're describing what's going on here, there's not a lot of stuff ultimately, meaning if you want to build your own instead of going prefab, you know, motherboard, hard drives, RAM, CPU, GPU, external media, you know, you're not having to connect a whole bunch of things. Even though this looks pretty intense and complex and probably has a bunch of LED lighting when we plug it in.
Yeah, it's really, definitely does.
There's ultimately a basic set of pieces that you need that you can get pretty cheap. In fact, you can even get now CPU-GPU combos, system on chip. You're not going to get highest level gaming performance, but it's a way to sort of start before you decide, well, I'm going to get a GPU later, but for now, I just want to play League of Legends and Counter-Strike and simpler PC games and run them at perfectly reasonable levels at 1080p resolution. So
when we were looking in here earlier, you mentioned something to me, I think this was before the show, about getting a second GPU, like there being room for a second GPU.
And
this
board absolutely has room, so you can go SLI. Meaning that you would connect two GPUs together, that second one would plug in here, and right here you can see this little exposed part.
Yeah.
On the first GPU, you would get a bridge that specifically connects them together. Now, this is not as good as having one really good GPU all in all, but it might be more cost-effective to get you to bump up in performance. I'm not saying that SLI is something that you should plan on, because there are games that just don't support the kind of boosts that you get out of having two GPUs, but some games do. So if you, for any reason, luck onto another card of pretty much the exact same type and want to plug it in, you'll get some sort of boost. So you can look into that as you go down the line. Don't plan on it, but it's nice to have that as an option if you're already going for a giant tower like this.
When it comes to upgrading a PC, you know, you've had it for a little while. Like, what is the best bang for buck upgrade, would you say? Is it memory? Is it upgrading the GPU? What do you think?
I think the GPU is going to be the way you want to go when you're upgrading your PC, depending on what you're already starting with. But that's going to drive general performance, especially if you decide that you want to hook your computer up to a 4K display.
Okay.
Generally, games that are CPU bound are going up into crazy high frame rates. Now, 60 frames a second is sort of that golden standard, especially in the console generation. Most TVs max out at 60 frames a second in terms of that 60 hertz refresh. But there are computers that computer displays that go up to 120 hertz, 144 hertz, 165 hertz, even more. So when you're getting into that territory, it is a matter of, well, what's weakest? A CPU can hold that sort of threshold back. A GPU can hold that sort of threshold back. But if you're just using a standard television, the GPU is probably going to be the thing that you want to boost up. But you'll get boosts out of getting better and faster RAM. You might want to overclock your RAM depending on how your system is set up. It's sometimes overclocking is all you need to do just to get a little more juice out of your CPU or GPU. So there's no really flat answer to exactly which thing you should get to soup up your PC. But GPU tends to be the easiest example, especially if a bunch of crypto miners have bought up all the GPUs you wanted, so you had to get a lesser one to start because you're not a Bitcoin farmer. So
dang, crypto miners.
Exactly. So there's that is sort of consideration. So again, it's not a flat, just get this and it's all going to be magically better. You want to kind of look around at what's the lowest link in the chain. But for the most part, like, you're not going to need to get another CPU for a while is very likely if you're not moving into crazy monitor territory and things like that.
Awesome. So this is the, again, the Acer Predator Orion 5000. This starts, I think, at $2,099. So, and I don't know, as far as price for a gaming rig, is that pretty standard?
Thank you, Acer, for providing this. I think that you can get similar power for cheaper if you build it yourself. And I think that you have options when looking around at popular internet retailers for PC parts and PC systems to find prefab machines that are cheaper. You know, you're going to want to look for certain gigahertz for your CPU and certain memory and speed for your GPU. And at least 16 gigs of RAM, and kind of go from there. And, you know, your dream machine may be certainly less than 2,000.
Yeah. All right, so we've taken a look inside. Now I've actually got the rig all plugged in and ready to go, so we can kind of talk a little bit about overclocking. Before we dive in, obviously, you're using some keyboard and a mouse that are different from what actually shipped with this. This is the Predator Athon 500 keyboard, which I gotta say has some weight to it.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy, yeah.
In the gaming world, is it good to have a nice, heavy, solid keyboard?
I think there's something to be said about that cold feeling of a full, you know, whether it's a steel or aluminum body. Yeah. This has blue switches. I don't know how much you're gonna hear picking up from that, but...
That's
but
clicky.
But, you know, as opposed to your reds, your cherry, your so on and so forth, there's different switch types, so you definitely want to know your stuff with that. We got this Predator
this
mouse eraser as well.
Science fiction looking.
You know, but we have, you know, a variety of different buttons on the side. We got these weight pieces that pull off and magnetically clasp back in if you want to add or reduce the amount of weight on that. That can really matter for how you move around.
Yeah, that's the Acer Predator Cestus 500 mouse. Okay, so this is all to say that we've got this plugged into the machine, so we can talk a little bit about overclocking, because that does seem like a really great way to improve the capabilities of your machine if you have it. And you were mentioning to me, and I didn't realize this is a thing, a lot of times these machines are being shipped with the idea that you are going to overclock. Like, in some ways, it's not something that you do to, like, break a warranty, although I'm sure there are cases where you could break a warranty, but they kind of expect that you're going to do this at some point.
More companies, especially every manufacturer, I think, has a sense that you want to push your system. Essentially, a part is going to ship with a stock speed that is known to be safe across the board, no matter which card comes out of the factory. And there may be some overhead on top of that, and there might not. Now, let's be clear. When we say overclocking, you are always putting your parts at risk when you push them a little further. Even though companies do, in some ways, sort of nonchalantly say, yeah, you're welcome to give it a shot, you're always doing this at a risk. You could harm your products. Always double and triple check. What we tell you is not the simple it's just the bare minimum.
Right.
You need to be careful when you do this. That being said, overclocking in the CPU and GPU space, you can push things just a little bit and to try and eke a little more juice out. Now, right now on the GPU side of things, we are within Windows 10 because there are a lot of apps that you can get that tie into your GPU no matter who made it. Currently, we're testing with MSI Afterburner, which is a free app, and we're not using an MSI part. But we can go in and we can play with the core voltage, power limit, and the temperature limit, along with the core clock and the memory clock.
And you don't need MSI hardware in order to run the software.
Correct.
It's going to still know how to control these
things.
Not
only that, but it's already recognizing that we have a GTX 1080. It knows what driver we have. I can already tell you this driver needs to be updated.
Sam.
Never forget to update all of your drivers. But there's so many different ways we can go. Now, when you're overclocking anything, you're ultimately having to sort of try and try again. You don't want to push your voltage all that high. You don't want to push anything all too high. The worst that's...
The temptation is to do that. Well, like, I want maximum power.
But generally what's going to happen is you're going to see artifacts or crashes. Sometimes it'll just quit out of the game that you're playing. Sometimes it'll hard lock and reboot the system. So your mileage is going to vary, but in general, your safest bet is looking online, depending on your GPU, and finding out what other people have successfully tested. So typing in your model number, typing in the RAM that it came with, the specific manufacturer, whether it ships with its own factory overclock already, because different manufacturers will sometimes apply an overclock, which mm-hmm. will be recognized in the software that you're using when you're testing that out. So these are ways where you can just add a little bit of juice to that core clock, to the memory clock, and to the core voltage. And this is sort of try it yourself. Test and reset, test and reset. Don't push too hard if you are not already enjoying a lot of leeway and a lot of airflow in your case.
Okay. How do you know that you need to do this? Like, you might, you know, get a machine and play a game and things look and sound great. Why, like, can they sound even better and look even better if you do this?
The biggest thing I would say is that you're going to get more frames per second potentially. And okay. not only that, but more frames per second depending on what you are toggling. Maybe you are just right on the edge of 60 frames a second with the settings you have. You know, that extra 5 or 6 frames a second can make the difference between totally smooth and those little dips at moments. And you don't want those in a high action precision shooter. You want to know that you're getting that constant 60, that perfect set of frame by frame by frame. And so that can make the difference. Hmm. Sometimes, though, you are way above. Your CPU and GPU are kicking butt. You are, especially in less demanding games like League of Legends and Counter-Strike, Dota 2 tends to run very well at a lower setting. You don't need to necessarily soup up certain games to get all of the juice to get to that comfortable 60 frames a second or even 120 frames a second, depending on older games.
Right.
So, but sometimes you might say, oh, I've got a little headroom, or, oh, I bought a certain edition that I know is not factory overclocked, and I want to see if my card has those extra, you know, 100 megahertz on the core clock. That's a few frames, and, you know, when you can get a few frames for free without really damaging anything long-term, you should give it a shot. If you have all of your ducks in a row, if you've tested out, don't, again, always be a little cautious with this
yeah.
stuff. Now, what's interesting is, and I've talked to you about this because this is a pretty recent development, is that NVIDIA has unveiled a new suite of support for its GPUs. And we've talked a lot about Intel and NVIDIA, but let's be clear, AMD, in terms of both their CPUs and GPUs, also gives you options. So never leave them out of the conversation. But NVIDIA is pushing forward with something called Scanner. Scanner is something that can be implemented in any app that manages your GPU. So your MSI Afterburner, your EVGA Precision X1. There's different apps that all sort of look at your graphics card and manage. I went and tested this out when testing out the brand new RTX 2080 and RTX 2080 Ti. These are NVIDIA's very new and very expensive cards as of autumn 2018. And they have support for a thing called Scanner that goes into your what you want in terms of megahertz on that core clock. And it will test out every bump in megahertz and every bump in that voltage, which are tied together if you really want to fine-tune and get the most out of your card, and to find out exactly how much safe headroom there is in those graphics cards. It's not perfect. It does not automatically check, for example, the memory clock. You have to figure that one out yourself. But in terms of just going in and saying, oh, let's just go a few more here on core clock and a few more here on voltage, you know, that used to take a lot of try and try and try, hope the game crapped out, lower it down, try again. It's this sort of automatic curve that it measures. It's fascinating, but it's pretty fresh. So I'm not guaranteeing it's going to absolutely max out your performance and not cause crashes. That right. can happen as well. Again, we're in the overclocking world. You can get a little bit, but you're always rolling a couple of dice if you're not staying within that really safe cushion of completely warranty covered.
Well, yeah, and you also want to take a look and be cognizant of temperature, right? Like, you want to have some sort of indication mm-hmm. as you overclock that raises the temperature, and that can mm-hmm. that fry a card?
Yeah, absolutely. You can fry anything if you are being belligerent and not being extra careful. These apps,
that would be me.
Well, but yes, I'm saying these apps aren't designed. They don't tell you, oh, you went too far. Now, yeah. your GPU may just stop functioning because it says, eh, or it could start just over going. So you're always kind of pushing your luck a tiny bit. But with these apps, you also do get fan options. You can go in and say, I want that fan to really crank up and be extra loud when we reach this certain temperature threshold. I want to make sure it stays cool, even if it's super noisy, even if it's drawing more power from the GPU, from the power supply in order to just keep those fans going. You know, you get a few more options that way. So you can still keep it cool. But again, you're running into a whole different world of, am I going to be, you know, running the fan so high that something else goes wrong?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a house of cards. One thing can affect something else. Considerations for this, obviously, fans. And I imagine because, you know, this is a gaming PC, you can build it to your specification as far as if you plan on overclocking, add, you know, some sort of souped up extra fan in there of some kind to counterbalance that. Mm-hmm. You need the space to be able to do that. You need the kind of the space inside of the hardware to do that. Any other considerations if you're thinking of going down this route?
Just being extra careful. You just if you're going into this completely, I mean, again, we're talking to people who may have never done this. If you've overclocked before, we're likely not telling you much new. Other than perhaps about that NVIDIA scanner app, which does simplify some of that process. But if you're grabbing an affordable card, chances are that knowledge is already out there. So just type in your favorite search engine, type in that model, look up what other people have tested in terms of voltage, in terms of settings on apps. If they recommend a certain app for a certain card, just follow that guide. But again, their card might be different than your card, so it's not always gospel. Now, in the CPU space, that's sort of a different situation where you may indeed have an aftermarket cooler. The rig we already looked at had a crazy huge cooler. You may also go with liquid cooling as a solution, which your case, you're going to make sure that you have enough room for that sort of liquid cooling set if it's got another fan going on. Sometimes liquid cooling doesn't really let you overclock. It simply lets you have a lot of heat inside of a smaller case. So don't just assume that liquid cooling is going to be this end-all solution. Now, in terms of CPU overclocking, that's a thing that you can do by going into your BIOS. Meaning, when you start your computer from scratch, sometimes it'll be the delete key or the F2 key. It'll give you a very quick prompt on your screen, sort of saying, tap this to go into your BIOS settings. And at that point, you may find, depending on your motherboard manufacturer, something in mine, at my house, it's... it's some sort of AI tweaker, I believe, is the name that I go to. And it has automatic overclocking settings. I don't recommend...
I mean, they've got it just baked right into the BIOS.
But I don't recommend necessarily just trusting your motherboard's automatic AI wizard. That's not necessarily a good idea.
Right.
Again, you want to look at the knowledge that's already out there about your CPU. Understand that your CPU might be different than other people's in terms of how it came off the factory line and what could be specific about it. But that'll let you go up a little bit higher beyond the boost speeds that are often baked into. Because again, that i7 that we're talking about, it says 3.7 gigahertz. It'll go higher because of default boost and turbo speeds. So you can go higher than those, and you'll get some gains, you'll get some frames, but you definitely want to be a little more careful on the CPU side. I'm not saying don't be really careful on the GPU side, but when you get that magic smoke out of a CPU, that's it. You don't want that.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare, and it sounds like something I would totally do.
But ultimately, again, we are talking as a sort of overarching, what is overclocking, what's it like? I'm mentioning so many caveats. I'm not going into the real weeds of what is very specific about different computers and different parts. Everything runs a risk. There's no fail-safe, you can just overclock and you're fine. But you can go little bits here and there, look up wisdom, and don't be completely afraid of it. You have a shot at some interesting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic stuff, Sam. Thank you for that. We're gonna wrap this up. Next week, we're going to dive into VR. I'm a huge fan of VR. I love virtual reality. I don't have any of the major systems, though, at home. And I know you have spent a lot of time locked into those goggles. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, take a look at some of the high-end systems. No, come back to me, Sam. Get out of VR. We're still doing this. Next week, though, you're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to take a look at the high-end systems. We're going to take a look at kind of the mobile VR, which a lot more people have access to, and kind of why, you know, the differences between those, and how to set up a room. Like, the different systems have different requirements for tracking and, you know, where those things go and how large your room is. We'll dive into all that stuff on next week's episode. Links, show notes, past episodes, subscribe links, all that stuff. If you want to find it for Know How, just go to twit.tv/KH. You'll find everything that you need there. That's the show page, our home on the web. New episodes will appear there every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. So check there, or if you're subscribed, it's just going to appear in your podcast catcher of choice. No need to hunt it down. If you want, you can also head over to the community that we have going on Google+. Just search for the Know How community there. You will find nearly 12,000 other fans of this show, all talking shop, talking about the stuff that we're covering here, talking about IoT, talking about makery things, you know, 3D printing, all that stuff. It's a very vibrant community, and you really should check it out. Go to gplus.to/twitkh, or just do a search for Know How, Twit Know How, on Google+ communities, and you'll find it. As far as Twitter, you're on the Twitter. Where are you at?
Sam Red, easy to find. Also over at Ars Technica.
Absolutely.
Where you'll find all of my articles about these kind of topics and way more.
Yeah, no, you do a lot of really great work at Ars Technica. So definitely follow his work there. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter and, of course, all over the Twit Network. And big thanks to Josh, who's been pushing the buttons and jumping through fiery hoops to make this show happen, at the Mac and Josh on Twitter. And, of course, Burke has been helping us in here as well with the engineering tasks. But that is it. I think we've reached the end of this episode of Know How. And now that you know how, it's time to build a machine. I think that's your next step, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye, everybody.
Hey, no, I got a question, though. Is there a veterinarian's office around, like, the studio? I mean, it's more like a weird office park. Because these pythons are sick.
Damn! Like, you brought your...
Put that in the bloopers, baby! Woo!